Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 361, recorded on January 12th, 2019. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This show is sponsored by Upstart. Head to upstart.com/TIOSS to find out how low your Upstart rate is, and ExpressVPN. Get 3 months free by going to expressvpn.com/TIOS. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the... Oh, smile. I saved it.
That was awesome. As soon as you started, I was just waiting to see where that went.
How's it going?
So I'm assuming what you meant was that yummy smile.
Delicious smile, yes.
Yeah. It's going awesome.
Great.
And this is the weirdest canceled podcast ever.
I know, right?
We're still recording.
Yeah, it's cool, huh?
Yeah.
So, we're doing the thing. And Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're still from an M-word thing, so I'm good on that.
Yes, still from the MacCast.
Yep. So, let's get into it. iPad Ben Gate 5.0.
Woohoo!
So, Apple... Yeah, okay. There's not really much to talk about here other than the fact
that... Did we talk about this last time?
We did.
We didn't?
No, we did.
Just, okay, so we don't need to get into it.
No, like, the only thing, nothing has changed. The only thing that has really updated is that Apple has posted a support doc now describing how the cellular models of the new iPads are made using this co-molding process. They have channels in the chassis where the antenna lines go, and then they just flow some like molten plastic into those things, and then they solidify, and that could cause some weird warping. It may cause slight bending, but it's held to a tighter standard than ever before. Like they said before, the four
400 microns,
pieces of paper,
four sheets of paper, blah 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 blah.
The one thing they point out though is the new straight edges and the presence of the antenna splits may make subtle derivations in flatness more visible only from certain viewing angles that are imperceptible during normal use.
What the frick does that mean?
It means that...
It means you're looking at it wrong.
It means you're a little whiny baby, probably. But they do say, if you believe your new iPad does not meet the specifications described in the article, please contact Apple support.
You know what, Apple? If I can see that it's bent, and that's not tolerance. That's not within any tolerance that's acceptable to anybody on the planet. Sorry.
Well, we're not. I mean, we're not
wrong. They are wrong.
Adam,
wrong.
Here's the thing, though, Adam. If it is within that four sheet of paper tolerance, I don't.
You
think
can't
you can
see
really,
it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but here's the thing: is people are taking visibly warped ones into the Apple stores, and Apple's being a-holes about it.
Well, for what it's worth, some of the photos used in these articles have been from people saying, oh, this is what happened to my iPad after spending a week in my backpack, having nothing to do with being warped out of the box.
Right. That's a different scenario.
That is a different scenario. But the photos that are accompanying these articles are misleading, is what I'm saying. At least in some cases.
Okay.
On Mac Rumors, it was the case, you know? So...
The thing is like, I don't know. It's a little frustrating to think that like you can't put your iPad in a backpack. What are you supposed to like carry it around on, you know, like holding it in both hands?
No, I agree. That is a completely different situation. That is a completely different situation. We haven't really talked much about that. I haven't really seen any.
Let's talk about that part of it.
I haven't really seen any reports on that other than just one guy saying that happened to him. And I don't know what's going on in his backpack.
Which one guy?
The one guy who had the picture that I saw.
So maybe he sat on it. Maybe some guy he was put on it. Maybe there's some other problem.
Did you interview a guy? I don't know.
I did.
Yeah, and his
it hasn't aired yet, but
okay,
we'll be on the interview. Will be on the next episode.
Okay. Well, then that
oh, cool.
That maybe
so
a
everyone
more,
needs to listen to Mattcast.
Yeah, that maybe
and it was the scenario down. Where you know it bent in his bag. He said it was with a laptop and a pair of headphones, and that was it. Like it shouldn't bend in that scenario either.
I agree.
I have carried my new iPad Pro in a bag with my laptop and by itself, but you know, like with other gear in the bag. I haven't had any problems.
Yeah,
I know that's totally
either.
Anecdotal. So I'm wondering,
yeah,
if these more prominent bends are really just anomalies.
I think they are. I mean, I have asked a lot of people, specifically my audience, to like anybody email in and tell me you had a bent iPad out of the box, and I've had zero. But we've seen reports from legit sources that people have experienced that. I think it's super mm-hmm. isolated. It's just, again, it's what we talked about last time, super isolated. Apple just needs to get better about how they're handling it. And I get that they're a giant organization. It takes time for these things to happen. And I think, you know, for the exceptions, it probably will get better at the Apple retail store. And even the guy that I interviewed, I mean, Apple ultimately replaced his iPad. Now he says the one he got out of the box in the Apple store and he showed the people there was slightly warped. So.
Wow.
Yep. And he couldn't get another one because they didn't have any replacements in stock. Like that was the last, do we still call them brown box ones or white box, whatever. It's the last, you know, replacement one that they had in the store at the time.
You know, on a side note, that's one thing that's always annoyed me. You buy a brand new product and there's some defect with it. And so they replace it with a refurb. So in effect, you bought a used refurbed product and paid full price for it.
Yeah. The funny thing about it is I always feel like the refurbed ones are better than the new ones.
That's always what I've thought. But maybe I just picked that up from you.
No, and the reason, and my logic here, just so people understand, is this is a unit that has been checked back into Apple. It's been gone through with a fine-tooth comb. Like, it's been inspected all the way through to put it back out into service, right? So, you know, that's not happening with every unit coming off of the assembly line, which goes back to what we're talking about here, where a small number of these things are bent, right? And I don't know what the factors are, if it's a specific factory or a specific, you know, batch of cases or whatever the cause might be. But, you know, you don't have someone at the end of the line inspecting every iPad before it goes into the box. Whereas with a refurb, it's gone through someone's, you know, hands and been fully inspected before it ends up in that box. Inspected, tested, gone through. So.
Yeah, that's true. Still, it's the psychological part.
I have to, you know, and I have to think about, because I've had replacements devices, and I wish I would have been keeping track how many times I've had to replace the replacement device. Off the top of my head, it feels like never. I can't think of an incident where I went in and had a defective device replaced and then had to go back and replace the replacement.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but now that you're saying it, I don't recall ever having to get a replacement replaced as well. And
the one exception.
Apple has swapped out a bunch of iPhones for me over the years.
The one exception was my MacBook Pros, but I went through a 2010 and then a 2011, but that was just like they had known issues for forever, the graphics chip. That's the one anomaly.
Yep. Okay. So let's talk about the poor iPhone sales thing, because Tim Cook sat down with Jim Cramer for I think there was a clip that went out, but there was an extended interview. The one thing I pulled a couple items from that. The first being that he's refuting the reports that the iPhone XR is a flop. He says that those reports are baloney. He calls baloney on that. And however, when he was asked about the iPhone XR sales relative to other sales in the past, right, Cook said that he would indeed like to sell more, which is, of course, why we're seeing these, you know, odd deals. They're reducing the price to vendors in China. They've improved their buyback programs in the U.S.
But define a flop, I guess, would be the question too, right?
Yeah. So they're the best. I think he said that they're the best selling iPhone right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing to me is that's in a time when how much is an iPhone XR? Is it $800?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What the hell? $800 for a phone is still crazy expensive. That's not a cheap phone. That's not the cheap phone. I mean, of course, next to the iPhone XR or XS, which is $1,000, yeah, it's cheaper, but it's not cheap. And of course, I enjoyed this quote that where he said, approximately, we knew that everybody would not want to spend $1,000 for an iPhone XS, so we made the iPhone XR. So I don't think he's getting it yet.
XR, you know, $499 if you trade your, or $449 if you trade your old phone in, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. And I think that the bigger thing here goes way beyond Apple, which is something that I talked about last week, which by itself is amazing. I remember that because typically I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday. But the point is that this is bigger than Apple. This is a market-wide trend. And so Apple needs to figure out how to adapt to a market where smartphone sales in general have flattened out.
Yeah.
Apple will give me $30 towards a new iPhone with my 5S trade-in.
Wow. Look at you.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
I just sold it for $50. So, and that was a good deal. I think it's probably, you could probably get $100 for it.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think I can get for my iPhone 3G? $20
to a collector. You might be able to get some good cash.
Yeah. It's not in great condition.
3G, 3GS.
3G.
3G.
It's not in very good condition. There's a crack in the case. You know how it got like stress cracks?
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah, it was like around the screw holes.
Yep.
Where the on the bottom mm-hmm. edge.
Yeah, yeah. Still looks pretty decent though. Let's see what else. Apple told suppliers to cut iPhone XR and XS production by 10% for the next 3 months.
That's after other cuts. Like, that's in addition to the other cuts that they've reportedly been doing.
Really?
So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and a second source actually said that, both new and old iPhones will be reduced by approximately, not by approximately, I think to approximately 40 to 43 million for January, March quarter, down from the 47 to 48 they were planning to do.
I mean, these are hard numbers to mess with. Or to really understand what it means, because Apple always does cutbacks after product launches. I think the one thing we know, right?
Actually, no, I'm taking
Apple
this
has
back.
Said so, and they adjusted their numbers, and we've been hearing from the media is, yeah, iPhone sales are slowing, but we knew that already.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like none of this stuff is really shocking to me, you know? It's like I've been saying all year, the last couple of years, iPhone sales are going to be flat to slowly downtrending for the next, till the next thing comes out, till the thing that replaces cell phones comes out.
Holodecks.
What that thing is and when that will happen is really ambiguous. I think it's a ways off.
Star Trek communicators.
Yeah. I mean, but
Actually, communicators are going to
be
whack.
Some sort of combination of wearable devices, I think.
Hmm.
You know, I already know people who are asking, can I just have my Apple Watch replace my phone?
Yeah, I have a lot of people asking that too.
So, I mean, that may be what it ends up being, is you have a cellular Apple Watch, you have AirPods, and, you know, that's how you go mobile, and then you maybe supplement with a tablet. I don't know what you would do for the other use cases. The problem is like an Apple Watch and AirPods don't solve every use case for an iPhone right now. And I don't think that they even could moving forward. So then it becomes, well, if you don't have an iPhone on you, you know, it solves maybe the phone call stuff and maybe text message stuff, but it doesn't solve mobile email, you know, some of the other scenarios. So it is then, you know, you add the heads up display in glasses that nobody seemed to want, and I don't know how you would sell that now. Like, you know, phones are a great form factor for a screen for a lot of the kinds of data that we want daily access to. So yeah. I just don't see them going away anytime soon, even if an alternative that I can think of is presented.
Yeah, I don't know that. Yeah, like you said, the sales, I don't think we can ever expect the type of sales we were seeing.
They're just going to keep going down. It's just going to keep going down. People are just going to keep holding on to their devices longer and longer, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's a bad thing for Apple. But here's the thing is, like, Apple, the way, I can't remember if we talked about this last time. I know I talked about it on my show. The way Apple's going to get by is with their services.
Yeah.
That's going to get them through the bump until the next thing. And so we have to stop looking at iPhone in any way, shape, or form for the health of Apple. Like, we should have stopped looking at it a year ago. And the fact that Apple stopped looking at it
that way.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, Apple stopped looking at it a long time ago, which is why they're not concerned, which is why Tim Cook can go on a show like this and say, this is not a problem.
Yeah.
You guys don't know. You don't know what Apple's up to. You don't know what we're doing. You know,
yeah, they're going
to
give us Apple cars. You know, I wonder if this is going to be, this is probably going to be a good thing for consumers as far as pricing and reliability and, you know, features and that sort of thing, software wise. It gets closer to the details are going to be more apparent because the features that separate these phones are going to be, those lines are going to be blurred. And Apple is going to have to do the thing that is in its DNA and really work those details.
Yeah. I didn't like how he presented the information about the battery replacement program being part of the problem.
Yeah.
I understand what he's saying there. And he's saying, it's this other thing. It's like people are choosing, because we had the battery replacement program, people, you know, realize they can keep their current devices for a lot longer, right? A lot of people swapped out batteries. And I don't even think he was necessarily saying it was the cost of running that program. It was more that because people were able to replace their batteries, they chose not to upgrade, I think is where Apple took the hit. And I heard that from a lot of people in my community. It's like, oh man, I got my new battery. Things are running faster in iOS 12. I really don't need to upgrade.
And I have heard the same thing from many people out here too.
Yeah. And so that did hurt Apple. Like, I get what he's saying there, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. And I don't think that Apple was caught off guard by any of this. And that's the funny thing from the community and from, like, when you read stuff online, it makes it sound like Apple doesn't know what they're doing. And that's totally not the case.
Yeah, there's no chance at all that Apple was surprised that people that bought new batteries didn't upgrade their phone.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they knew exactly what was going to happen. Yep. And they probably had a pretty good idea how many people were going to do that upgrade or that battery swap out.
Yeah. I mean, they were definitely caught off guard. I think they did think maybe some of the newer models were going to be a little bit more popular than they were. But other than that, you know, I think they knew the trend was going to be a downward trend. I think they did maybe think they was going to do a little bit better, but again, this is not doomsday scenarios. It's not good for Apple in the short term, but they're going to be fine long run.
Yeah, they're already years beyond where we are today with right. their planning.
Yep. So, yeah, the big question mark is the services play going to work out, especially with the video stuff? And we're really not going to know until we have all the details when they launch that in the spring. But I do think it could be huge for Apple.
Huge.
If the way they're planning it, the way we're hearing they're planning it, turns out to be how they do it. The big variable there is, and where I do have huge concerns, is Apple has historically not been very good at dealing with media partners, especially on the video side of things.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because... an interesting development occurred this week with Samsung. So Samsung worked with Apple to integrate iTunes movies, TV shows, and AirPlay 2 support into its latest smart TVs.
Yep.
Which is,
this is part of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yep.
Services.
Yeah. So, if you think Apple hasn't been planning beyond the iPhone... just look at the Samsung, LG, Vizio. Isn't there one other company?
There are several. Yeah.
Several companies.
LG, yeah. Sony, Vizio, Samsung. Yeah. So the idea is these apps, and it appears that the apps, the iTunes TV shows and movies, those are going to be exclusive to Samsung, at least for the time being. But they give you access to your iTunes library. So any movies and TV shows that you've purchased, and I believe you can purchase new stuff through these as well. That's pretty cool.
Is Apple building those apps on that platform? Oh. They're not, I mean,
I don't know.
They're not really just knows. Like opening APIs and letting Samsung build those.
I would
apps.
Imagine Apple's probably building these apps.
Yeah. Or at least they're directly involved in the process,
because everything I've ever heard about smart TV apps, I don't have a smart TV,
is the trash garbage.
Totally.
Yeah. The apps are garbage.
The worst things ever, which I mean, that could play, this could actually play. Maybe Apple does want them to do that. They could play right into Apple's hands because you get people hooked on the services part of it. And then the experience is bunk. And then the person's like, well, I really like this. I'm going to get an Apple TV.
Right.
Like, yeah. It could be. It's sort of like iTunes on Windows was. I'm saying it half jokingly, but I do know people, and I've heard from people who are like, yeah, I was a PC user. I started using iTunes, and I really liked the experience in terms of the content and how, you know, the philosophy and just the Apple way of doing things, but it ran so poorly on my PC, like I got frustrated, but I was hooked on the Apple ecosystem. So they upgraded, you know, they switched. It literally happened. Or happens.
Yes. But then there's the other side of it where people are like, wow, this experience is so crappy.
Right.
I'll just use Amazon Prime instead.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and don't forget, we also got Apple Music on Amazon devices, you know, last week or a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is working great for me.
Yeah. But Jeff, it means you're not going to buy a HomePod.
Too late.
Too late. You already didn't.
Yeah. It's well, you know, I bought a HomePod when they came out. So,
right.
What this did was it gave me the ability to play my Apple Music content in my bedroom.
Yeah, so you're not buying a second HomePod for your bedroom.
That's true. But, you know, I probably wouldn't have anyhow. So it's not like Apple lost money from me in this case, but they did make Apple Music more valuable to me because now I can use it in more places.
And see, I think this is part of the changing in philosophy that we're seeing with deals like this TV deal and the AirPlay 2 deals and the, you know, the Amazon stuff, is that Apple's recognizing moving forward that services growth is going to be a big part of what the company needs to be doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's all more about, like, you exactly what you just said, Jeff, is like having a better experience or more options to use that content more places will drive more adoption of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's see, as far as AirPlay 2 support goes, like I said, it seems to be AirPlay 2 goes to all these TV manufacturers. The apps are only for Samsung right now. But it can be controlled via lock screen widget or in your control center, which is
Siri.
Incredible. Yeah. You got Siri capabilities. Mm-hmm. So you can do things like request a specific show be played on a specific TV. There's HomeKit options in there. Nobody's really gotten their hands on this, right?
No. Not that I know of.
Yeah. So it's supposed to be coming in the 2019, this year's smart TVs for Samsung. And then we'll also see firmware updates for 2018 smart TVs.
Yeah. Were they demoing any of it at CES?
They may have.
Yeah.
But the Siri thing is interesting to me. So how is that going? Yeah, of course I said the magic word. How is that going to work? Are you going to Ola Siri your TV, or is that only through
your phone? No, it'd be your device, and then it's air playing from your device to your television.
So you Ola Siri your device.
With your HomePod or your watch or your iPhone or your iPad, yes.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Right, because you're still just AirPlaying. You're just directing where AirPlay goes. So it would be the same as if you brought it up in Control Center and you swiped up to your different AirPlay destinations, right?
Yeah, I think so. That makes sense.
Yep. Now, I don't know about on the Samsung television where you actually have the app, though. And I don't know if there's voice, what's Samsung's voice thing? Is that available on Bixby. Their smart TVs?
Yeah, they have Bixby on there.
Bixby. So I don't know if, I would assume you could Bixby it
probably
on a Samsung
smart
TV. Yeah,
I believe it did say that there was Bixby integration.
Yep.
Man, I should change my series name to Bixby.
Except you can't.
Oh, I wish. That'd be cool. I'd be the coolest
that would be
kid
kind
in school.
Of funny, though.
But I think this is kind of great. You know, you get the Chromecast experience, right, with your Apple devices, which is really good. Why do I want to buy an Apple TV now?
Again, it's going to be the UI experience. I mean, it would just be the experience that Apple TV offers that smart TV apps don't, which is smart TV apps, again, what I've always been told is they just feel horrible.
Yeah, so it's mainly
if
the...
If you want a HomeKit bridge.
Yeah, no one gives a crap about that, Jeff. I mean, some people do, but...
You're asking reasons.
Thank you. I appreciate the effort.
I still love my Apple TV. I mean, it's
I do too.
It's pretty freaking awesome.
The TV app really makes everything come together. The TV app is the selling point, and I feel like Apple is doing a poor job of explaining that to people, which is you know, perfectly exemplified by both my mother and my cousin. My cousin is like my age, and she didn't really understand the TV app. She just said, I said, oh, don't you ever use this app to find your stuff? And she's like, oh yeah, that sometimes comes up for some reason.
Yes.
And she goes to the respective apps for the providers. And I'm like, no, you don't go to, like, put those in a folder and forget that they exist and just use the TV app. And I don't think she really understood it even when I told it to her.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, that's the reason to get the Apple TV. But I think that I would imagine when people start buying these Samsung TVs, they'll say, oh, this is very nice. I'm good. And they won't need to get an app. They'll feel like they don't need an Apple TV because they can just Chromecast.
I don't think that's a big problem for Apple. I mean, they're not making a ton of money off of Apple TVs anyway. What they're more interested in is selling you more iTunes content, selling you more premium subscription content, selling you more, you know, so like once they have you in that, you know, in the app, they're going to be, hey, this, you know, this movie's not available on the services that you own. Do you want to buy it in iTunes or do you want to subscribe to this premium service or, you know, and then the Apple's going to make money that way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that works on a Samsung TV, though. That's interesting, you know?
Yeah, that will be interesting to see.
Do they still get a cut if you're inside one of their apps? And then, you know, I don't know. A lot's going to come to how they leverage that stuff.
I think some of the way Apple is dealing with those purchase subscription things is going to change. Excuse me, because this is different. This is about getting people into the ecosystem.
Correct. Yep.
And it doesn't have anything to do with Apple's hardware.
Right. Right. But, you know, I think Apple also historically has known that the more people that they have in the ecosystem, just by sort of attrition or whatever, they sell more product, more hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully.
If you know you're going to an Apple thing, you start and you have a good experience, like Jeff was saying earlier, you have a good feeling about Apple. And the next time, you know, you're looking at phones, even if you're an Android user, you're like, maybe it's time to give this Apple thing a try. Yeah. Right. You become more receptive mm-hmm. to that. And you're like, well, you know, I was using iTunes or whatever on my smart TV and I bought some movies and it'd be nice if that was all integrated and into my other devices. So I think, you know, again, naturally over time, I think it's where the growth comes from something like that. And even just from a branding perspective and a marketing perspective, it's massive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. We have a lot more to talk about, but we'll be back after these messages from our sponsors. Our first sponsor is ExpressVPN. With all the recent news about online security breaches, it's hard not to worry about where your data goes. Making an online purchase or simply accessing your email could put your private information at risk. You're being tracked online by social media sites, marketing companies, and your mobile or internet provider. Not only can they record your browsing history, but they often sell it to other corporations who want to profit from your information. Take back your internet privacy with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, and tablet. Turning on ExpressVPN protection only takes one click. ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. Protecting yourself with ExpressVPN costs less than $7 a month. ExpressVPN is rated number one VPN service by TechRadar and comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you ever use public Wi-Fi and want to keep hackers and spies from seeing your data, ExpressVPN is the solution. And if you don't want to hand over your online history to your internet provider or data resellers, ExpressVPN is the answer. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/tios. That's expressvpn.com/tios for 3 months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/tios to learn more. Our second sponsor is Upstart. Applying for a loan is a lot like applying for a job that you don't get to interview for. Instead, loan companies make their decisions based off your credit score and history without getting to know their whole you. But now, thanks to Upstart.com, it never has to be that way again. Upstart is revolutionizing the way you borrow money by rewarding you for your job experience and education in the form of a smarter interest rate. Unlike traditional credit underwriting, which would be biased against people with a short credit history, Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in less than 2 minutes without affecting your credit score. The best part, once your loan is approved, the funds will be transferred to you the very next business day. Over 100,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, fund their wedding, or to make a large purchase. Free yourself from the burden of high interest rate credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. Hurry to upstart.com/TIOSS to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes and it won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/TIOS. We thank them both for their support of the iOS show. And we're back from commercial time. Okay.
Boom. Welcome back.
We're back. We're back from the commercials. So let's talk about the 2019 iPhone rumors. Because
are there any?
There are actually
a bunch. Camera.
Of course, because we're bunch. One day into 2019.
Let's talk about them, all the rumors. So according to Barclays analyst Blaine Curtis, he believes the 2019 iPhones could feature support for Wi-Fi 6, otherwise known as 802.11ax. And what does that mean for you? Well, I'll tell you. It's higher data rates, increased capacity, better performance in dense environments like concerts and sporting events, and improved power efficiency for the devices that are using it. So it'll be finalized in 2019. But that's nothing new to Apple. They often hop on board new versions of Wi-Fi before they're finalized on the draft versions. And of course, it'll also be beneficial to homes that have many internet connected devices.
That's the bigger problem, I think, these days, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't run around going, oh, my Wi-Fi is so slow. What I run around going is I've got too many devices on my network and it's slowing everything down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the problem, is like, you know, when you start connecting your toaster and your shower head and your belt buckle to the internet, it's a problem.
What do you need the shower head to be connected for?
Oh, you don't know about like Moa smart shower heads that are HomeKit controlled?
Is there a little camera in there?
Hola Siri, can you warm up the shower to my desired temperature?
That's dumb. How would it do that? Does it have to like run the water?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm kind of into that. Sort of.
So you wake up in the morning. You can even have a wake up scene, Michael, you know, with your smart lights, and they come on to, you know, a nice 20%, so you can walk
around.
Can
it play that little sound, that little
tune? Turn on your HomePod with some nice music, and then set the shower to a nice warm temperature.
No, what I like is
add a timer that says, "All right, your water's ready."
Yeah, I mean, that all sounds good, but what I really want is my cat to wake me up 45 minutes before my alarm by just screaming at me about feeding it.
Yep.
That's what I like.
Hey, yes, lady, remind my cat to wake up 45 minutes early and scream.
Yeah.
So yeah. Basically what you need is a Wi-Fi chip implanted into your cat.
God, that would... No, I can't give him cybernetic powers.
That would be bad. Yeah, no, I mean, so, yeah, again, I don't like Wi-Fi speed. I guess as we get more higher-end video, like if we're going to get to 8K video, that'll come more into play. But I think the bigger part of that new spec is that
better for congestion.
Manage more devices on your network better, then yeah. That's good.
Yep, yep, yep.
Yeah. And people need to remember that when they get an iPhone or whatever device that has the Wi-Fi 6 built in, it doesn't do you any good until your Wi-Fi router is Wi-Fi 6 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
I think our listeners know that.
Yeah, but occasionally a reminder doesn't hurt.
True.
And guess who won't have a Wi-Fi 6 router?
Besides Apple?
No, Apple.
Man, that's a bummer. That's such a bummer. I really like my Apple routers. 2019 iPhones are going to have tri-lens rear camera.
Yeah, the tumor camera.
Yeah.
The cracker camera.
Yeah, that's right. It's a cracker.
Oh, for sure. Holy crap. I never thought of it that way. Well, now I can't unsee it. It's the cracker camera.
Yeah, so at least one of this year's iPhone models is rumored to include a triple lens rear camera.
Lenses on a cracker bump.
Known leaker Steve Hammerstoffer released some renderings of this cracker.
Horrible.
This cracker cam.
Like, and if you don't like the camera bump,
you're going to love this.
Yeah.
You're going to smear some jelly on that bad boy and go to town on your new cam.
Nom nom.
Putting it on a Ritz.
Yeah. So some sources have indicated Apple is working on time of flight depth sensing for higher quality augmented reality. I don't know that this would be a time of flight situation. But it's interesting. There are some of the possibilities of a triple lens camera would be improved 3D spatial recognition. So you could do something like stereoscopic imaging. You could also do a 3x optical zoom instead of the 2x that we have, or improved low light performance. We don't really know. And I think that those are probably discrete features based on the optics that they use. I think you have to have the same focal length on two lenses in order to do the stereoscopic imaging. But let's see here. What else do we have here? Yeah. Oh, according to Wall Street Journal, the triple lens camera is going to be on, let's see. They believe the 10R successor is going to still continue having the LCD display, and it's going to bring a dual lens rear camera. The 10S successor will have an OLED display, of course, with the dual lens rear camera, but the 10S Max successor is going to have the tri-lens cracker boy. And they think that all three models may lack 3D touch, which is sad.
But wouldn't be overly surprising.
Why, though? I don't understand why they're getting rid of it.
Apple never really embraced 3D touch.
No one uses it.
I use it all the time.
Remembers to use it.
Normies totally use it.
I try and use it all the time on my iPad. And it doesn't work.
Well, if they added it to the iPad, that would. I mean, I think that's the issue. Is they're just like half-assing the whole thing.
Exactly. So they're add it to the iPad, or just
what they always do when they release cool new features, and then they kill them.
And they go, "Oh, nobody used it." It's like, yeah, because it's an inconsistent user experience. Yeah, dummies, that's your fault.
3D touch is like the touch bar on the MacBook Pro. If it was everywhere, then developers would embrace it and turn it into something that's really useful. Yeah.
I don't care what they do it or how they do it, rather. But they do need to bring the touch interface into alignment across their devices. It became way too fragmented. It is currently way too fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if this is the move that, you know, enables that, fine. They could go the other way. I'd be perfectly happy if they put 3D touch on the iPad and went that way.
Maybe they just can't do it on such a big device.
I think that's part of the problem. I think there has been some technical challenges, especially when you've got like a 12.9 inch screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But it does muddle up the user interface experience of iOS. And I think they thought maybe they could get away with it, like consumers would just adapt. But I think that exact scenario that Jeff is describing is a lot of the experience that a lot of people have. And, you know, while it's not a major thing, it is one of those things that you're like, ah, this is so annoying, right?
Yes. My typical routine with 3D touch on my iPad is press and hold. Oh, damn, all my icons are jiggly. Tap done, tap the app, and then go do the thing.
See, I never do 3D touch. I very rarely do 3D touch on my home screen.
Oh.
It's more, I do it all the time.
It's more within
because you
apps.
Get the little pop up. Depending on the app, you get common things that you would do, like shortcuts.
Yeah,
also the share option, so you can send a link to the app.
Yeah, I do that.
I always forget, though. You know, like you can quick pop up with the clock application to start a timer. I start timers all the time, but I'm always launching the app and setting the timer. It's stupid.
All right. Well, here's something a lot of people don't realize. When you went to share an app, if you go to the app store and do it, like send someone an email, you have to put a subject in because there's nothing there. If you send an email to share from the 3D Touch, it automatically puts a subject in.
What?
Yeah, it's stupid. Why don't they just put the subject in on both?
Yeah, that would be that'd be a good idea, maybe.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, so, I mean, if tap and hold is going to be the new 3D Touch across the board, I'm okay with that.
I guess if it works just as well as...
But you will lose the icon ability. I mean, they don't have a solution for that, Jeff. Right?
Yeah.
Because right now it's jiggle, so unless they reassign jiggle, which that would be more preferable. In my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe jiggle should be press and hold on the home screen, not on an icon, like in the empty spaces between the icons.
Yeah. Or I don't know. I mean, I guess you could put a, like, just activate it some other way from preferences or an edit button or a button in Control Center. Maybe a button in Control Center would be the best way to handle it. Just like rearrange desktop or something like that.
Yeah, I could see that working.
Because, I mean, I do that so infrequently. That is kind of prime real estate for something that I don't think people do all that often.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but I bet you're right. The people that are routinely organizing their apps on their home screen, making folders and stuff, it's probably people like us and the people that listen to shows like ours.
Yeah.
The smart people.
Maybe. Or crazy. I think crazy is the right word.
You know what you could do? You could activate it just even through like a press and hold on a corner or something like that.
Yeah, but who's going to get that? They have to figure something out. We'll get back to you.
All right, cool. Let me know.
Yeah. So the last thing, unreleased iPad mini with a redesigned cellular antenna has appeared in photos. So
I have a hypothesis on this.
Okay, go.
My hypothesis is that at one point when the iPad Mini 4 was still in production, they were working on a prototype for the Mini 5 and then ultimately decided they were just done with the line. So they stopped the prototype development, and these are photos from that time.
Yeah, that sounds like a decent theory. But regardless of that, whether it's something that's coming soon or it's just a prototype that's going away, it does have a more modern cellular band, unlike the current Mini, which has just a big plastic window. It's now just the band. It has a headphone jack, two speakers, no LED flash, an A9 chip. But like you said, it may just be a prototype. Although it may come in March. Who knows?
You know, if it comes in March, I'll be really excited. I love the iPad Mini.
I think the iPad Mini is coming.
Yeah,
I hope so. I'm not. Yeah. I'm not getting my hopes up though.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be on a really long update cycle. Just like it, you know. I think this sets the update cycle, which is what, like 3 years.
Yeah,
No, I mean, you guys are laughing, but I think that's a legitimate okay upgrade cycle for iPad mini because of the market. There is a small percentage of the tablet market that really likes that size and form factor. I think they could also get away with that sort of release cycle for the SE.
You know, for the majority of the market that would want an SE, yeah, they could totally do that.
Yeah, but they don't sell that anymore.
There is that.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
Hold on, let's take a look. Website, did I not?
Apple.com.
No, I don't think you did.
iPhone.
My dude.
Oh, no, I was looking at the compare screen.
Yeah.
The compare screen.
iPhone 7, 8.
That's right. They
XR,
killed it this
year. SE is still available at select resellers.
That's it.
Because they haven't run out yet.
Yeah.
And in I think in some markets, maybe too, internationally, but you're right.
Yeah, maybe internationally.
I think you can get an SE in India, probably.
Mm-hmm.
They should not have killed the SE. Again, I think they should have done a similar release cycle to the iPad, what will be the iPad mini release cycle.
I don't think people would be very upset with that.
I don't think they would either.
Yeah.
I think they'd be happy.
Although,
and the people who like that device, I mean, like, I don't think it's unreasonable to be, I mean, Apple is selling a 3-year-old iPhone on the, you know, with the iPhone 7. Like, a 3-year-old iPhone is not that bad.
Uh-huh. I think, I think the only problem with that is the people who want that smaller form factor, but they want the more modern tech are going to be disappointed with that.
Then you're not that type of consumer. The person who's buying an SE, in my opinion, is the person who just doesn't want anything bigger than a 4-inch phone. That's their primary buying motivation.
But they also want more modern tech.
Nope. I really don't.
I think they do. That's what I've heard from people. They're like, why am I buying this phone? It's so old. I just want a small phone. That's what I've heard.
Hmm. Well, if you buy it the year it comes out, then you have new tech for 3 years.
Okay, we're done with you. You're no longer allowed on this show.
It's okay, Adam. We stopped recording the show a while ago.
Yeah, the show was canceled a while ago, so it's fine.
Yeah.
All right, so if you guys don't have anything else to talk about, let's do some picks, and I'll let Jeff go first.
Okay, well, then my pick, it's actually a Mac app that goes along with an iPad app. So I don't know if you guys know, I stopped using Paper by 53 and switched to Linea.
Oh, ooh, I like Linea.
And I switched to Linea. It offered a lot of stuff that Paper by 53 didn't, but the big thing was when Paper by 53 was sold, you know, like the whole company was sold, the new owners pulled a really crappy move where they took away features that everyone had paid for and then said, okay, now you have to do this other subscription thing to get back what we took away from you that you already bought.
Wait, who did that?
The company that bought Paper.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't opened the Paper app in a long time. Oh, that would make me peeved. I lost all my in-app purchases?
They changed a thing where you get some of them back because I'm air quoting, grandfathered in. But it was a crappy move. It's not as functional as it was. The whole thing was syncing. Even though you owned that already, it's gone. You have to pay for it as a subscription now. But anyhow, so I switched to Linea. And Linea is really awesome. It's a really great drawing app. And they have a new thing out called, what is it, Linea Link? Crap, I have to go look it up now. It's an app on the Mac that links up to Linea. Yeah, Linea Link. So it links up to Linea on your iPad And now you can see all of the files that you've made, and you can import them to your Mac and have them drop right into whatever image editing app you want to use on your Mac. So you can pop them into Photoshop or Affinity Photo, stuff like that. And it's so slick. It works so well. You see all of your images broken up into the same groups that you have on your iPad. It's an awesome little app. So it's, I think $4, maybe $5. And it does what it's supposed to do really well. And to me, it makes Linea even more valuable because I can create an image. And then if there's fine tuning that I want to do in a Mac app, I just pop it over. All of my layers are there. Everything. It's awesome.
And this is by the Icon Factory.
Yeah. And Icon Factory is the company that makes Linea or wrote Linea.
Neat.
Yes.
And they still have Xscope, which is app. I haven't looked at the Icon Factory in a while.
Xscope is the bomb.
It's very expensive. I must have gotten it on a sale or something. It's $50. Anyhow, Linea Link.
Well, Linea Link.
Adam, what's your pick?
Yeah. I'm gonna give you guys a $25 app. What do you think about that?
Do it.
Actually, this is something I had played many times in the past, but I never had my own copy of it until New Year's Eve. We were looking for stuff to do, and I thought, oh, we need to do this. So my pick is, and there's actually five of these, but I'm going to pick the original one, the Jackbox Party Pack.
Oh.
You guys ever play Jackbox games?
Yeah.
You don't know Jack and Fibbage.
Yeah.
So much fun, especially if you have an Apple TV, because there's an Apple TV app. You can get it on other platforms too. So if you have Amazon Fire or you have Android stuff or whatever, it doesn't matter. But basically, they're party games, and there's a bunch of different ones in each pack. I think you get sort of five different games. Old school Mac people are going to remember You Don't Know Jack, and it's even better and more awesome now in this thing. It's kind of, so You Don't Know Jack is kind of like a quiz show thing. So in this original pack, you get that. You get a game called Drawful, which is like Dirty Pictionary. No, it was really control sort of how they really adapt depending on the people that you're playing with. Fibbage is a really fun one where you're sort of given a scenario, and then there's a fill in the blank, and everybody tries to come up with an answer that is a lie answer, and then people vote on them to try and figure out which is the actual correct answer. So there's that one. I think there's one called Word Spud. We haven't played that yet. It's sort of a word game, but just super fun. We had a ton of really good time with it. And it sounds expensive up front, but what's great is the way it works is once one person has the app, so you buy the app. If you own the app, if you want to play with up to, I think it'll do up to 100 people, but, you know, 8 people in a party, you bring it up on the Apple TV, and then what it gives you is you go to the website, jackbox.tv. It gives you a code, and then everybody just puts that code in on their device. They don't even need to have an app. They just a web browser on their device, so they can be on any kind of device that has a web browser and play the game.
So, that's cool.
Yeah.
So this is...
So super, super fun games. There's 5 editions of it. I'm going to recommend you start with the classic Party Pack version 1, but if you get into it,
is this a Mac app?
It's also available as a Mac app.
I'm trying to figure out which to link to.
Apple TV.
I'm looking through the site, and I'm trying to
get it on Steam.
Maybe you send me a link to it. Is this not? Yeah, just send me a link to it. I'll figure it out.
Do you want the iOS link?
Yeah, sure.
The App Store link.
Yeah.
Cool. Got it.
And how much is it?
$24.99.
Okay. Cool.
So it sounds expensive, but I guarantee you will get like hours and hours and hours of fun out of it.
$25. All right. So my pick this week is Chronometer. And so I might have talked about it in the past, but Chronometer is one of those apps that let you track your food that you eat. So you can set it to be, you know, on standard calorie counting, or if you're keto, what have you, do all that stuff. Just kind of log your food. It's food journaling. And the reason I'm picking Chronometer over MyFitnessPal and Lose It is because Chronometer does a thing that they can't or refuse to, which is when you're going through these sorts of apps or even just trying to come up with a diet and your caloric intake and what it should be for your goals, you've seen this before, they ask you, you know, what is your activity level? And it's, you know, has like sedentary, moderate, high, etc. But that's always bothered me because I, you know, it varies day to day for me, right? And and that the estimate doesn't jive well for just me being an engineer or something like that. I don't know. And the fact that I have an Apple Watch to me says, you know, my watch is always telling me how much activity I'm going through. And that's probably what's made me a little more paranoid about that. That idea is, I know day to day I may be over by a lot or under what my goals are. And so I just wanted an app that would take my basal metabolic rate, which is, you know, the rate that you burn calories if you're like comatose, basically, and then add in all of the active calories from my watch. And those other apps don't do that. Chronometer is the only one that has a setting for, I think it actually says like none or something like it says, you know, use if comatose, basically. And it says, you know, only use this if you're using an activity tracker. So you set it to that, it throws in your basal metabolic rate, and then you can pretty much just earn food throughout the day. And it seems to be very accurate. I think that those other apps use some sort of estimation and averaging over the course of days, but it won't pull in just active energy. Those other apps only pull in exercises. So Chronometer is my pick. It's free. You can pay for it to get some additional great features, such as, you know, grouping, but there's a lot of, you know, you can do custom food and recipes and all that kind of stuff. And I really like it. So check it out. Chronometer. Have you guys tried messing with that kind of thing?
Not to that extent, but this looks kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I used it for a while for keto, but now I'm trying calories, and
I use carrot.
Yeah.
Yep.
I never looked at carrot. I wonder if that would do it for me.
No, it's just a basic food tracker.
Okay. Yeah. See, this thing is pretty nice. It says for my weight goal, I can eat 723 more calories today.
And that's, I mean, it does that sort of thing, but. It's
but it doesn't basic. It doesn't roll in the activity that you do throughout the day,
like to give you credit for your activity,
yeah,
and adjust the numbers.
Uh-huh.
I thought it did, like, yeah, because you can log your if you log your exercise, I think it will adjust your calorie total.
Okay, well, yeah. And the other cool thing about this is because I have a smart scale, it will automatically update that as I go.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
So, and then of course your basal metabolic rate changes based on your weight. So it'll tweak it for that too. So yeah. You can find all of our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show on iTunes, give it some stars, tell a friend, send your feedback to feedback@theiosshow.com. Our sponsors, of course, are Upstart. Check them out at upstart.com/Tios and ExpressVPN. Go to expressvpn.com/Tios to get 3 months free. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen's at the Mattcast at mattcast.com and at Mattcast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, you're welcome.
And Jeff Gamet. He's at Smile Software and at jgamet on Twitter. Thank you for being here.
It's always awesome. This is just great every week.
Yeah, it's my favorite canceled show.
I know. This is my favorite canceled show.
I think we're going to be back next week too. Speaking of being canceled, I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show. An iPod. An iPod.
Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.